Welcome to the Picture House podcast. Today we are delighted to present a very special recording of a fantastic Q&A from director Harry Wootliff and lead actor producer Ruth Wilson following a preview screening at Picture House Central of their psychological drama True Things, a deep dangerous delve into obsession and infatuation. Our host is writer-broadcaster Anna Bogutskaya.
I thought you might have called.
I've been busy.
He just disappeared.
Don't know what's wrong with you.
I think men find you difficult, that's what.
Susan?
No, it's important she knows these things. She's all on her own.
I wish we could stay like this forever.
Congratulations to the both of you on making this. Truly haven't been able to stop thinking about the film since I saw it months ago. I wanted to go back to the beginning and ask you both, when did you discover the book that the film is based on, the Derek K. Davis book, and what moved you about it?
Ruth discovered the book with Jude Law. I'm going to tell you a story for you.
I've just spoken for an hour.
when they were doing a play together, and that was many years ago. And then they were looking for someone to adapt and direct it. And I think then Ruth and I were both very much in agreement about what we liked about the book, about the character of Kate, her wit, how subjective the book was, how much she sort of gets sucked into her head and her world, and how derailed she is by a relationship.
Yeah, it was a book that Jude found originally, and then, or he was sent it by his team, and he said, he gave it to me and said, I think there's something in this, will you read it? And I said, yeah, there is something in this. And this was 8 years ago when we were doing a play together. And what I loved about the book, it's sort of written almost like diary entries, they're kind of fragments of this woman's life in that particular moment of an onset of a relationship. And it feels fragmentary in a way, you're so lost in what's going on that you know, there isn't sort of linear, it kind of feels as an experience. So I felt I hadn't seen something that subjective on that exact moment of a relationship before. And I felt that all of us, most people experience that at some point in their life. So I thought, actually, this is really kind of something interesting to explore.
Mm. And then it was a sort of jumping off point from that, wasn't it? The narrative's quite different, but the atmosphere is the same.
And can you talk a little bit about that exact thing, that early stages of the onset of a relationship, of how do you visualize that interiority of Kate and that the beginning of an infatuation? Kind of how did you start getting into that aspect of it?
I guess it was talking about experiences.
Yeah, we did a lot of anecdoting, sitting down and chatting about our own experiences or friends' experiences. I think it was also like we were sort of, I was really fascinated in, Harry describes it quite well as like a Midsummer Night's Dream effect, the idea of the magic dust on that first moment of love, and that you, or lust actually, and you sort of fall in love with a donkey and then the veil lifts and you realize it's just a donkey. And I sort of think I was really always interested in the veil lifting because I remember that really clearly, like suddenly like, his earlobe's really horrible. And I don't fancy you anymore. And you're like, why does that happen? It's so weird, but it happens. And it's like, what is that? And also, what's the such extreme thing before that where you think this man is the man or this woman is the woman? Like, this is going to be the person that solves everything for me or makes my life perfect. So it was about us analyzing what that comes from and why it ends so quickly too.
And also the kind of addictive nature of it and how high it makes you. And I guess how exciting it is as well. It's not just a foolish decision. It's also, you're sort of high on your own endorphins.
Mm. Yeah, and it makes you feel good. I mean, there's a thing of that as well. The complexity of it is that even though everyone else says, why are you with this man? Actually, you're feeling, you're having great experience, or moments of it feel great. And when he's not with you, you feel awful. But when you're with him, you feel alive. So it's kind of analysing that really, and sort of looking at from this perspective, this woman, I never thought she was a victim. That's the other thing we also were really both on the same page about, is that she's not a victim at the will of this man or the will of this toxic relationship. She is responsible for it too, or she's involved in it too, and she's taking part in it. And actually she's driving the decision to be in it, plus she persists, she gets him, she pursues him, and then she ends it when she's ready to end it. So it's complex and it's really grey and interesting, you know, that's what we were sort of both interested in exploring.
It's a real push and pull between them, which is a thing that really, really resonated for me. And despite the toxicity in both of their behaviors in so many ways, that's what's so meaty and fascinating, but it's also really difficult to portray. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the kind of the lust of the film and the choreography of that, and kind of how do you approach filming such, not just necessarily physically explicit scenes, but emotionally explicit scenes, because so much of it feels so raw.
I guess for me, the intimate scene, physically intimate scenes, are also always about something going on emotionally. There's always a kind of currency there. So it was making sure that all of the sex scenes were really different as well, and there was a kind of correlation or a development emotionally through each of them. They've all got a different meaning, and they've all got a different meaning for Kate actually as well. And sort of talking about like what sex feels like for a woman as well, and like on the receiving end, are we feeling something the same as the man's feeling? Are we feeling something different? We also talked a lot about like Kate's sexuality. Is she driven by lust or is she driven by love? And you know, she's driven by both. Like still in this day and age, how it's a taboo for a woman to be driven by lust. You know, women are judged and men are not judged. And choreographing the scenes, I think as well, because for me, having trained as a dancer, I always feel like the sex scenes are kind of like we're choreographing a dance. So for example, when we're in the car park, you know, Tom's putting his hand up Kate's skirt, and it's literally, you know, you're going to put your hand up her skirt, and how long are we going to keep it there? We're going to keep it there for like 3 beats, and then you're going to put your hand up, and then we're going to go in, and then we just practice it until it was a bit like a dance. That's right, Ruth, isn't it? And you know, so you don't want to be thinking it, as an actor, like, I'm kissing this person, should I be pulling away now, or should I be still kissing them? I think you want to know that, you know, that you're just there for a certain amount of time. So once you've got it in kind of in the DNA of your body, then you're free, I think, to think what you want to think and to feel what you want to feel. So there's kind of two parts to the choreography or the staging of those scenes.
With every scene, I think sex scenes have to have a reason for being. So they have to have, like Harry says, an emotional journey within them, or they have to say something, or they have to be move the character in some way or push forward that journey of that character. If they don't, they start to feel disingenuous, and therefore they start to feel awkward and uncomfortable and slightly, I don't know why they're here. So it was always about making that really clear about what the intention of the scene is. And this character has got a sexual appetite, and that was really important for us to show on the screen and not be judgmental about it, to be really honest and upfront about it. And also, like we were saying, about each scene is very different about how, you know, what really is going on in the character's mind at those time. Like we were saying about the scene at the lake that Harry talks about quite often, which is, you know, she's not having an orgasm there, but she is enjoying the moment. She's enjoying sex because he's so into it. And so it's really interesting about that dynamic of like, actually she's happy that she's satisfying him in some way. And that makes her feel good in that moment, even if she's not having an orgasm. So it's like, that's quite interesting, all those details and specificity of like what goes on between relations and between people. Mm-hmm. It's such a rich area for sort of investigation, actually. And if you have the right team around you that are willing to sort of ask those questions and talk really frankly about it, then actually it's really interesting. And you get really great material as a result, and trust within the team doing it.
And I kind of wanted to ask about, even though he's not here, but about this effect that Blonde has on Kate, kind of this intoxication. And the moment he comes on screen and they start interacting, it's like she's been hit by a bolt of lightning and something's awakened. Can you talk about what you think makes him so appealing to her?
You know, in the book, I remember this actually, I forgot this, but in the book, the first thing she sees is his crotch. Remember that?
I remember that.
Is that just sort of actually denim Levi's advert or something? And it's like on.
I think
his
it's the only scene I remember from the book. Yeah. Where she's now,
it's like, all... but that's the moment, the first moment, and it's so that identifies her sexuality or her need. Yeah, I think it was always really interesting about the character of Blonde, about what he represents for her. I mean, again, he doesn't have a name. We don't find out much about him. We don't get much backstory. So it's really everything she projects onto who this person is and what she wants from something. And he's charismatic and gorgeous. And
I think he sees her as well. Like
he does.
He kind of he listens to her. He looks at her. I just went for everything that I thought, yeah, that's... We want to be listened to, don't we? And
seen.
Absolutely.
But I think he listens and he sees and he gets her. And I think he gives her that kind of message quite quickly on. You know when he says, worse than prison, like, do you want to come out? Straight away he knows she's bored. He gets it that she's bored. He gets it that she's stuck. He gets it that she's not in the right place, I think. Because he starts off by, he's very attentive towards her. A lot of the scenes, she's really, it's either he is very attentive to you or you're very attentive to him. And then it kind of swaps, which I suppose is that what you were saying about the power dynamic, mm-hmm. feeling like sometimes you're in control and then it kind of slips away and they're in control. And every time she is left not feeling in control, she wants to go back to kind of regain that control.
It's kind of like an emotional high, and she's constantly chasing the next one.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask a little bit about this, the sense of timelessness of the film, because outside of the shots of the iPhone where they're messaging, it really feels like it's a film that could be set in any particular moment in time. Was that a deliberate choice on your part?
For me, I feel like Ramsgate is a bit stuck in time, not in a nice way as well. I think... It was a deliberate choice to. I think the way she dresses, I think you can't. There's something slightly stuck in time. I think there's a feeling definitely that she fits in with Ramsgate, which I don't know. Something lovelier about that though as well. Yeah, and also with the aspect ratio, mm-hmm. partly chosen to kind of box her in, partly chosen so that we're focusing on Kate and not on things in the periphery, and partly I think it makes it feel timeless as well. I don't know, there's something about the story I think in a way that is timeless as well as modern, and it felt like it suited that layer on top of it.
And I have to, just because I even went in to watch it again on the big screen, but I have to ask about the particular dance scene. I know there's several, but I'm talking specifically about the PJ Harvey Rid of Me dance scene. I found it incredibly stirring, but can you talk about why that moment is so important for Cade and how you shot that as well?
It's all down to Ruth's brilliant dancing, really, that it's brilliant.
It's kind of quite true. Fantastic, isn't it?
if Ruth
had loads of lessons. No. I didn't have any lessons.
I mean, it's interesting because shot that in... we didn't shoot that in Spain. We were going to, and then we couldn't. It was the last thing we did.
Yeah, we did it in Ramsgate.
And
a nice club in Ramsgate.
And it jarred with both of us that we felt like we had to be in Spain and how were we going to make it feel right. We also didn't have that many extras because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So that also was nerve-wracking. It was nerve-wracking.
Well, I was like,
you don't know what's going to happen.
There's a few scenes that always you go, okay, I'm slightly, oh God, I've got to dance. And then there's one where, and the other dance, the drunk,
the party.
I'm like, oh God, I've got to be drunk. And actually they were really fun to do and they were actually really easy on this shoot. It was very I didn't do anything in preparation. I just thought, okay, I just gotta go let rip on the day. And what was nice obviously about this was that we had COVID. Our show had been shut, our film had been shut down for a week at the beginning of COVID, and then it shut down for 5 months, but we had 1 week of filming, mm-hmm. and we came back and completed it. So all of us hadn't been out and danced for months. And it's about sort of her own sense of agency and freedom and liberation, I suppose. And I always, what I loved about how we shot it is that we didn't initially have the idea necessarily of her dancing on her own. It was always going to be in a club with people. And then when we were there on the day, we're like, let's just do this on her own too, because like all the dream sequences and all those, it fits in with the same sense that this is in her own head in a way. It's that idea of when you dance and you're dancing just for yourself, not for anyone else, and you're letting yourself go and you're feeling the music and you exist on a different plane. And I kind of felt like that's what happens in this moment. And she gains strength from it, or it's
brilliant, those moments where things happen, I think, kind of spontaneously. And watching Ruth dance, and then when she's finished the dance, she kind of just walks into the space she's finished. It's like, oh, it looks so cool when she's actually on her own, so yeah, let's do something like that. And then just going, let's clear the floor and just dance on your own, and then Ruth just, you know, being there. But yeah, I mean, hats off to Ruth, because she's just got to stand there and then just go in and dance with like 12 extras who I can hear apparently, you know, get these feedback. They're complaining about the music. They can't dance to the music. I don't care. Ruth's dancing.
If I'm dancing, they've got to dance.
Yeah.
But we had two tunes. We had PJ Harvey playing. We had Patti Smith, Horses, as well. So we had two like legendary female rockers playing brilliant tunes that were just, you know, amazing. And again, you know, there's a reason why we picked those two women and those two tunes. They're sort of iconoclasts, and just that song is so great. You know, it's like, and it has a real anger and freedom to it, you know?
Actually, that song as well was something I was listening to take us into the Spain section. So we'd finished the part in Ramsgate, and I was getting a bit sort of like, well, what's going to happen when we get to Spain? What's kind of the vibe of the Spain bit? Mm-hmm. And just starting to listen to that song and then thinking, actually, it'd be...
That's the vibe.
Yeah. That's Ruth texting me going, when are you dancing to? I'm thinking, I don't know. Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about then what happens after and at the end of the film when she does essentially get that ick moment with Blonde, when she suddenly sees him for who he is, which is precisely the moment where he's kind of ready to give her everything that she supposedly wanted.
Typical. I think it's sort of brewing, isn't it? It's not necessarily happens over just in a split second. It's sort of some things just start becoming clear to you. So I think there's a gradual realization for Kate, but it is that moment when she arrives in Spain, and as Harry says, like the smell, the sounds, suddenly you feel like you're a different person, and suddenly you're not stuck in Ramsgate anymore, you're somewhere else, and perhaps there's other opportunities and there's things out there, and you see a wider world, and he suddenly doesn't fit into your wider world.
I also think she's growing through the film towards that moment. So she's you know, she's having that confrontation with Alison, her friend. She's, you know, there's something where she's realizing she's not her tribe, as Blonde says. She's, you know, she's pulling away from her parents, not wanting, getting over that feeling that you've always got to please them, got to be the good girl that does the right thing. I think by, you know, hopefully that when she's in that kitchen showroom and she gets that message, you get the feeling that she's not just wanting to be with him, she's just wanting to escape making cakes, really.
I think we've got time for some audience questions. Right there in the middle.
Thank you very much. I just have a quick question about costumes in the film, because it seems like an interesting thing to touch upon, because I think she wears a lot of interesting costumes. They seem to be emblematic somehow of the state of play in the film, but also shoes, that comes up a lot as well, commenting on shoes, and that Dulles Ditchwater guy who talks about shoes being important. I wondered if you could both comment on that somehow.
Well, poor Ruth had to wear that skirt and those thick denier tights every day. Somebody put it really well.
Reminded me of school, those tights that you do that and all the dust comes off. I was like, I've got to put these on every day. Horrible.
In the discussion the other day, I thought it was great that, when she said that it's a bit like you haven't got a proper outfit for the office and it's the sort of job you think you're not going to have forever. So she sort of has this makeshift like black skirt that she just wears every day with some different tops that she's had for a long time. And then she has her kind of comfort jacket coat.
Yeah, it's like a non-commitment. She's not committing to that job. She's not, doesn't want to be there. So she's not going to get the right outfit for, you know, she's just going to make do.
I liked it that she had a kind of work image and her home image that was quite different as well. So you don't really feel, it's not really her.
I always think also she felt quite young to me. Like, I'm 40, but she felt sort of like she still wore quite youthful clothes in some way. So she was still slightly trapped with her, infantilized a bit by her parents, by the world that she's in. She hadn't really sort of mature in a way, like even in the way she dressed, certainly in her little shorts. You know, it's like kind of she's still slightly like a child and holding on to that because it makes her feel safe in some way.
We talked about how she's in the wrong clothes at the wrong time as well. So when she goes for the date on the lake, she's in her work outfit. And when she has the date at the party, she's in the outfit she's put on to meet the other guy. So there's a feeling that she's never quite kind of in the right clothes, which was quite fun to play with as well.
Were they something that was in the book, or is that just the medium that you chose to kind of communicate those feelings?
I think I made the shoes up because...
I can't remember.
I had a shoe
Harry's
experience.
Harry's going to take it. You have it.
No, I did have a shoe experience.
You had a shoe experience?
Yeah. They're really nice as well. And I didn't wear them for years afterwards. So kind of these like red, like, well, I won't go into it, but yeah. And I'm trying to remember what... I think he said, why do you wear those shoes? And I didn't really have an answer. Because I like them.
Because I like them.
But I didn't wear them again. Yeah.
No. Bastard.
That's such a mean question. But actually...
She's no longer with him. Are you married to the man?
No, I'm not married to the shoe man. Yeah.
But actually, that's a really good point. If I can piggyback on that question, is kind of how she, you mentioned that she feels very at odds with everyone around her. How mean did you want to go with her parents, her coworkers, everyone around her who's kind of not blonde?
For me, I was trying to hit kind of sweet spot that where they're not villainous and everything they're saying doesn't come from a bad place, or it comes from, so I think Alison's frustrated with her life. I think she sort of vicariously lives through Kate's experiences. And I think the parents just do what parents do, where they worry about you in quite an annoying way, where you just think
they don't really want to know the truth, right? No. Parents, they're sort of like, hope you're okay, but they don't really want to ask too deeply. So that's sort of what they do. They kind of just can't understand how you're just not getting your life together.
No. And when you have some sort of failure, they just go, oh.
They don't really want to ask because they don't want to have to sit there and deal with how they might have been responsible.
So I hope they're not too evil. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dear, that face really hit me. Hi, I was just wondering if you've ever, like, related to the character of Kate in any way. Have you ever actually desired to just have a completely different life? Just sort of been bored with your
every
life?
Every day. I want to own a cafe on a beach. In many ways, relate to Kate. Yeah, of course. I mean, like, I can relate to both Kate and Blonde, to be totally honest. I've been both those parties in a relationship where you sort of, either you're really into it and the person's, like, not into you as much, or vice versa. So I can relate to both those characters. In terms of wanting a whole different life, yeah, you always have those fantasy dreams, but I think I'm quite happy where I am. I'm all right.
Maybe when you were younger, sort of a feeling that you
when I was younger, not feeling like you found your tribe, not knowing really where you belong. And actually, I don't even say only now that I'm really finding my tribe, as it were, like people that I really respond to creatively, but also in my life. So I think it takes ages to find your tribe, I think. Well, it has taken me a long time. So yeah, I totally relate to her in that respect. And trying to fit in where you don't fit in, really, and not quite understanding how to express yourself in that way, you know, or not having enough confidence in yourself to be yourself in those environments.
Hi, Harry. Hi, Ruth. First of all, I want to say the film was absolutely brilliant. I think what stands out is the relationships are so intense. But I know you've talked about Ramsgate, but I was wondering, what intrigued me was how important the locations were to you, because I really felt like the story could have been set anywhere, and I wondered what significance there was to setting it in that sort of southeast England location, and then when she went to Spain, and how important that was to the story, because it really stood out to me that she was kind of, Kate was sort of in her own head or in her own, like, boxed in, but she was in this like coastal location. I was just wondering, I haven't read the book, I was just wondering what the significance of that was.
I went quite early on, our producer said I should decide where we were going to shoot this film. So I went off on this little trip around the coast on my own on the train, having a look at different places. What I liked about Ramsgate was the timelessness, the exterior location, the harbour, and the hilliness, and the architecturally kind of this brutalistic kind of architecture of the car park, and there's these arches that are near the harbour, and so things, because once you're inside you can change the way things look, but outside you're kind of stuck with what you've got. So the brutalist kind of architecture and where she works, the exterior of the office, and sort of lent itself to feeling like it was a seaside town, but not too cliched, not too kind of like slot machines and fish and chips. There's a bit of that, but not too much of it. Yeah, feeling that she was in, I can't remember in the book now where she lived.
Well, I think it's I don't know if it was specific. I think it's like, she's a Welsh writer, so I think it was in Wales actually, but I don't think it was by the sea, sorry. But what I liked about it being by the sea, and what you've like picked up on, is that it was really interesting. You know, usually if you shoot something by the sea, you use the sea. Like, there'll be scenes of the actor looking out wistfully across the ocean, you know, wishing for a different life. But we didn't do any of that because she is locked into her brain. She's locked into her experience. She's kind of like so close to escape and yet not taking it. So that was really interesting. It was like that she can smell abroad. She can smell Europe, but she's not looking that way. So I thought that was really interesting about her psyche, that she's sort of closed off and she's not looking open. You know, she's...
Yeah, because she's stuck, but there's no reason for her to be, really.
No.
You know, she could do anything she wants. I mean, that's the other thing about the relationship, is it kind of opens her... I think bad relationships sometimes do that, kind of open your eyes to other things or other... It's kind of self-development steps towards being someone different or more true to yourself. And even though it's not a great journey to have gone on, it does leave you in a different position where you open your eyes to parts of yourself that you might not have thought about before, and you think, yeah, I want this and I want that and I want to do this and I want to do that. I don't know, it changes you for the better as well. Yeah. Can.
Hi. I was just wondering, I've not read the book, but I was interested to see where Kate found happiness in herself, because I feel like there was like a touch upon her being an artist and drawing in the beginning, but I feel like for me what really stood out in the film was the sort of gaps between her being with him and this need for there to be more, and everything was okay when she was with him, but when he wasn't around there was like a real sort of, it was sort of, yeah, like a sort of spiraling of like an addict, and then at the end you really saw sort of hope and how it lifted her, and I suddenly kind of saw who she was, and I kind of wanted to see that, I think, more throughout the film, and I was wondering if there's more of that in the book.
I think in a way that kind of the idea of who she is in the book and in the film, they're kind of separate entities, I think. Yeah. Also because in a book you can talk about what's going on in people's heads, and in a film you can't. I guess I think there's little clues to the fact that she's got something about her. You know, she's
funny.
Ruth was always saying, make sure it's funny.
She's got like a quirk. In the book, I mean, certainly what picked out to me in the book was she had this really acutely observational way of looking at life. Like, even though she was sort of lost, she still could see really clearly, or she could see things clearly. And that was her dry sense of humour and her sort of quirk and slightly, you know, rebellious nature.
Yeah.
And Harry had written in this scene of her drawing, and I was like, that's really lovely, because actually it made me give her a slight backstory of someone that had potentially wanted or gone to art school at some point, but hadn't quite had the confidence to commit to that, and so had lost sort of her confidence in that and lost sense of that side of herself which made her feel good or gave her an outlet or a creative outlet. So in a way, part of her creative outlet is now blonde. You know, it's like that's where she puts all her imagination and all her efforts. But I think you see parts of her. You see that she has potential. He sees she's got potential. He actually identifies that she's funny and she's unusual. And that's what makes her connect to him and cling to him in a way. So I think there is elements of her throughout. It's
And I guess when, you know, even though the scene when she's in the car with Rob becomes quite tragic, that you see when she's in the restaurant, I think she's quite funny. She's sort of like, she's quite, you know, she knows what she wants, and she sort of played him a bit.
Well, I think she has agency in that way. Like I do feel that she's quite driven. She wants him, so she's going for him, you know. And I think actually that, in a way, although it's not the best relationship, it shows that she has life force, you know, and that she's going to achieve something and get somewhere.
And even her sort of skiving off work, or, yeah, being slightly, I think you get a spirit of her rebelliousness, the way she taps her pencil.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think we've got time for one last question over here.
I really liked the way that with the cinematography you decided to either sort of keep it quite a wishy-washy focus, so it really pushed us in or pulled us out of what Kate was feeling. And I was wondering if that was more of a, like a collaborative decision, or it was between you and the DOP, or how you sort of came up with that.
Definitely collaborative between me and Ashley, and also Ruth talked a lot about in prep how making sure it's subjective, making sure the camera explains certain things, and being concerned about whether that would happen, and me saying it will happen, or things that were happening in the scene and worrying how would they come about, and me saying the camera is going to, you know, the way we shoot it is going to do a lot of the work for us as well. And then picking Ashley because she's done brilliant stuff like that in past, in a feature and actually in shorts and music videos.
Yeah, and on the day she would be, she was also operating Ashley as well, so she was very intuitive with the scene, so she would feel the emotion of the scene and feel the emotion of where Kate's going and sort of follow my lead a bit as to what I was doing. So she would be like, oh, or see me and Tom, or me and Blonde holding hands, and she'd move the camera down to capture that, which may not have been caught otherwise, you know. So she was, or it might have been caught in a wider lens, or, you know, standing out, but she was moving the camera to find things that we were doing instinctively.
I mean, you sort of have to work in collaboration as well, because what I always forget is the DP, they can't see beyond, you know, it's like they're in blinkers, and also they can't hear. So, because I sort of feel, I don't know, it's good to remember that they, you know, they need your guidance actually, because they can't. So, sort of doing the scene and then going over it and saying, actually, you know, Ruth did this really good thing here, or, and then Ashley would say, oh, let me see, and then we'd rehearse it. And then, so it's sort of, you know, hopefully it looks very loose and unconstructed, but actually, in a way, it's, you know, it's constructed.
And really, just to wrap up this conversation, I wanted to ask, having screened the film and done, I imagine, a ton of these Q&As and conversations with in front of people, what have been some of the most moving reactions you've noticed from audiences that have watched the film?
I think the fact that people go, this is me, this was me, I relate to this. I really liked it when people talk about the sort of typically female emotions. You know, things like, oh, I've cried. I really like it that you see someone kind of like, you know, a woman unraveling on the screen, and that, you know, I don't think I think, you know, typically male traits are valued and female traits are not, or they're judged. You know, you're hysterical, you're unhinged, you're too emotional, you're too intense, you want to talk too much, or, you know, whatever. It's like, well, actually, I love it. I think people really relate to her on a just kind of female level, even if those things haven't happened specifically to them. They sort of say, oh, I really connect with it. You know,
yeah, I think what I've loved is actually people come away with loads of, they relate to something in the film. They really connect to something, whether they connect to the friend, or they connect to the parents, or they connect to they've either been in that situation, or they've seen their friend in that situation, or they've experienced some form of it. And I think for me that's really exciting, that, you know, we've touched, or we've reflected life, and that's that's an achievement, that's a success. And I also think what I love about the film is that it's complex, it's grey, it's really like, she's not a victim entirely, and she's not the sort of typical loud, brash, messy woman. You know, she's seemingly quite shy and quite passive, but actually she has this drive underneath. So I was like, that's not often seen on screen. It's often some, you know, loud, messy, drunk person or whatever. And I just think I'm really proud that we've put that on screen as well, because that feels actually more relatable and honest.
Congratulations again on making the film, and thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
Everyone, please give a warm round of applause for Ruth and for Harry.